He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to this week's version of Car Keys with Mike Flint, Robin Leach, and Jada Markin online to talk about whatever we want to talk about for this episode. I will start it off by saying I know now a lot more about plug-in hybrid vehicles, or at least one brand. To our listeners who have heard us, maybe you know already all about the plug-in versus the hybrid versus the pure electric and the plug-in hybrid. I guess those are the four options, right? The plug-in hybrid is a vehicle that has both plug-in capability for short-range all-electric use on a daily basis if it is charged fully or up to 80%, whatever is the advised rate, overnight at your residence, place of residence, and you start out with a full charge battery. The when that full charge range is exhausted, which can go at two levels, very quickly or very slowly, the gasoline engine will kick in and either take over full control of the vehicle for the rest of the gasoline range, or it will combine a use of the gasoline-powered motor and the electric battery, because there is always a slight chance that there will be slow and intermittent charging going on to the battery as you are driving along in what might have become full gasoline use. The experience I have had is that I was able to drive a Audi Q5 plug-in hybrid recently for some time. It was a loaner. And I was able to go approximately 60 miles with on the hybrid combined use of gasoline and hybrid battery use, and with about 4 miles of range showing left on the battery portion of the powertrain. What happens is that hybrids, gasoline, plug-in hybrids have short range because they have a much smaller high-voltage battery in their system than the all-electric cars do. Partly because of its space, the ability to fit it in somewhere in the framework of the car, and the other part of it is, of course, it's less expensive because you're buying a vehicle with a much lower powered battery and therefore lower cost battery as part of the drivetrain situation in the car. I don't exactly know when the battery is on full or in joint use with the gasoline engine, because the kind of driving I was doing was mostly leaving the dealership with the vehicle for the time I had it, or I still have it, and I'll get to the problem in a moment, and the arrival where I was going some 60 or 70 miles away. I know probably that I started off in full electric. You can adjust the use of the battery between full use while it is charged to automatic, which puts the system into an automatic switching system between use of the battery and use of the gasoline engine or joint use, depending on what you're how you're driving the vehicle, while you're driving it steadily for this, let's say, 60 to 70 mile trip without stopping.
Let me barge in here for a second, if
Go
I may,
ahead.
Robin.
Yep.
So I have not driven the Audi, but I've driven BMW and Volvo and Mercedes hybrids, and basically, there can be a lot more than that, but they're basically three drive modes, not systems. So
right.
You're either in full electric, where you really force the car to run the electric motor only and run the battery until it's dead,
that is
and
correct.
Then it'll switch. Or you can run them into a hybrid mode, where it pretty much the car will run like a non-plug-in hybrid. So it will use the engine most of the time, but it will shut it off when it doesn't need a lot of power, when it comes to a stop and idles.
Correct.
Or you
duplicated my exact description a few moments ago.
Or you can put it in a full gasoline mode, which is often called a sport mode, where the engine is always on, even if you come to a stop. And in that mode, it actually charges the battery a little bit. So, for instance, when I'm driving on if I know I'm going into New York City, for instance, I will start out and run the car on hybrid or power mode, and so keep all of that electric charge, keep the battery totally charged, so that once I get into city driving, I can put it into full electric, because driving in this electric car in the city or in city traffic is actually quite more pleasant than it is with an engine going on and off. So anyway, that's
an interesting description. I do not know whether the Audi could use that so-called fourth dimension that you said. Let's say start out with gasoline only and run it and leave the battery fully charged or not. That's an interesting idea, and whether I'll get to try to find that out before the car goes back to the dealership, I don't know. But to the rest of the story, before we move on, it is now sitting driverless or useless, not useless because the gasoline engine could be used, but I tried, which became in vain, to get it to charge. And being Sunday, I was not able to call the dealership to get some assistance at the in the service department of what I was doing wrong or what I needed to do right to get a charge to start. I plugged in the whole charging equipment, which was a cord, multi-use cord, depending on what I needed, including a cord that would allow 110 voltage plug-in from a socket on the outside of the house that I had access to. But all I got when I plugged it in were red lights on both the charging cord unit and the actual access point on the vehicle. And I never got what needed to be called, what I will call a green light condition, which would have said I had everything hooked up right and everything, and the current was flowing into the vehicle. I worked on that for 2 hours, reading the manual at my side and trying all sorts of things. So I'm stymied in learning about that particular availability on the Audi situation. What I did not say at the beginning, but what I will say here, is that the range on the Audi, which only came, it was not a new vehicle, it was a 2021, it came with a 14.1 volt high voltage battery, which by all means is not very large, and the stated range, if charged to 80%, is 19 miles of full electric use. And when I got the vehicle, which had been charged, it said 24. And that, being that I took a highway trip and had it on automatic, a dual-use capability, that range slowly diminished as I went to my destination in southern Connecticut. And so I know that there was charging going on coasting, and maybe at the stops when I had to stop in heavy traffic, yada, yada, yada. But 19 miles is not a whole lot for a daily use vehicle. We have talked on this show about the RAV4 plug-in hybrids and probably similarly capable use of the, let's say, the Honda CR-V and other plug-in hybrids as being able to go up to 35 to maybe 40. I haven't seen one that said 40 miles a day without needing the gasoline backup situation. And I made a comment on this show about how you could possibly, if you just drove less than 35 miles a day with these particular vehicles, you might never have to put gas in it. as long as you didn't go beyond that range on any given day for up to whatever time you finally did do
Let me interrupt again. If you're in a situation where you're only doing 35 miles a day and never need the gasoline engine, you bought the wrong car.
That's very true. But I'm not. This is not a point that needs to be discussed. It just is what a couple of owners said. And I said, well, you better at some point or other. And I said this years ago with the Chevrolet Volt, which had a gasoline backup sort of generator engine. And a friend of mine had one and was getting about 70 miles a day, I think, or 80, up to 80 miles a day with that on the pure electric. And the comment was, well, you better use gas at some point because gas ages when it sits in a tank at rest. And whether or not it'll actually be useless is probably not the case, or alternative case. But the point of this particular comment to our listeners is that, you know, you could conceivably have this car with the hybrid version so that if you did go to New York and you did go to Boston or you took a day trip, you don't have to worry about range anxiety, which is the whole point of that particular idea of having a plug-in hybrid with the hybrid backup situation, okay?
So are you sold on the concept?
I've been sold, as listeners who've listened to us, Jay, and you included, on the hybrid concept as being the ideal way to get a combination of electric range improvement over just strict gasoline-powered cars and not having range anxiety. Since I don't have the use of this loaner that I have now on a daily basis to find out what I could do with this kind of descriptive use of the vehicle, I don't know that I'm really sold on such a low-powered, high-voltage battery in a plug-in hybrid vehicle. I think they need to be a little bigger, bigger or more efficient in the Toyota and Hondas that I know of, and I suspect, I don't know what yours vehicles that you drove were capable of pure electric.
I know that the more recent plug-ins, plug-in hybrids get 50 to 60 miles, which is what I've seen in front of the Mercedes.
Well, see, this is the difference between 2021 and 2024 or 5, because that is the kind of improvement that has been ongoing as the early editions of these plug-in hybrids manufactured cars, were discovered to be either a little bit shorter on range.
Here's the moral of the story. Your Audi dealer needs to, rebuild or modernize its courtesy vehicle fleet if they hope to sell vehicles.
Thank you, Jay. Well, I didn't have to worry about range anxiety. I'm just giving the listeners this week are getting a first-hand use
car
of a vehicle, okay? They don't have a lot of these vehicles in loaner. I had to wait 3 weeks to drop the car off for service to get any loaner, and this is what they gave me. And I'm very
all
pleased
right
to have it.
So let's move on to something else.
Absolutely.
I was reading this morning about, we've talked about autonomous vehicles in the past, and we all know
apparently
that. And Mercedes has just announced their Driver Assist Pro, which is actually coming out on the new CLA electric car that is currently being sold in China and will be sold here in 2026, and that car will have that autonomous driving capability. It's not quite a level 3, but it is what they call a level 2++. And obviously we were expecting this. They've made a lot of progress in that department, and this new car has I think like 12 ultrasonic sensors. About 8 cameras. They have a wide range camera on the front windshield and a radar in the grill. The thing about it is it's AI driven, and the idea is that the more you drive it and the more you drive it in traffic, the more the system learns from driving patterns. And it seems to work pretty well, even in dense Shanghai traffic. So it'll be interesting to see. I can't wait to try one, in the next year or two.
You may see it in Europe, Jay, sooner than you'll see it in the U.S.
No, actually, this particular system, we will be, the U.S. will be the second market it comes to, which is kind of surprising, but hey, this is kind of good news, I think.
It has to go through approvals of the NHTSA, National Highway Transportation System, and other members to get full usage, because this has been one of the problems with the taxis, the electric driverless taxi situation approval going on. It'll be interesting to see. I think AI is going to be a very interesting help it adapt more quickly to potential problem areas, and I just hope that it adopts it before the person who owns one or at least gets to test drive one has an accident, because AI hasn't factored in that particular incident and fixed the problem that caused that incident in the first place.
I do think AI is the game changer here, and obviously I'm totally incapable of beginning to explain how the system works. But
I don't think our listeners really care. But would you be willing to own a car with that capability and really just sort of think you could go on the highway and not
Absolutely.
Even worry about having your hands on the wheel? And would you
Absolutely.
Do it personally? I want you to know if you do it because of your age and you love of driving, and that's the way you prefer to go in the future.
I would do it, and the argument is, and I've said this all along, this autonomous driving is most beneficial and useful in city driving, in
okay.
city traffic.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
obviously, in our neck of the woods, we have beautiful roads, and of course I would continue driving, totally, you know, being the pilot in command. But the reality is when you're in the city driving, whether it's New York or any other city, and you're crawling through traffic, there's absolutely no enjoyment in the driving itself. So why not let something that will do it equally well or better
okay.
do the job?
Does that mean That's, when you get in such a car, you put the address in before, like, you know, what, your destination and the GPS
yeah.
system, so that you don't, so you just can't sort of meander through the city of New York enjoying the sights driverless, because you don't have a destination put in. That's right, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And actually, Mercedes is working on all of this with Google Maps prior to launching the system in the U.S. So basically, you'll put your destination in. It'll calculate the best route first, and then obviously it'll do the driving for you as you go. It'll also have, so you will still have to be touching the wheel from time to time, but it will also have what they are calling cooperative steering, which is to say that grabbing the wheel, if you see a pedestrian or anything and you think the system is not going to react properly, you can still override the system, and it will not disconnect the system. So you can weave one way or another at any moment and let go of the wheel again, or at least,
that's all the good stuff you have to have, so that the driver can take command at any point during a trip
Correct.
To a particular destination they may have put in. If they want to suddenly stop and get something because they see a store that they want to stop at, which wasn't on their radar when they first set the thing up. To the point of back, though, is most of this stuff going to be limited to city-urban type of driving to limit the speeds to a speed that may or may not range around the 30-mile-an-hour limitation for these systems to work appropriately?
I don't know, but I'm thinking no. And the article I read was mentioning the fact that actually, you know, it's more complex for these systems to be to work properly in urban situations, and it's much easier on highways. There's just a lot fewer factors when you're driving at, you know, 65, 75 miles an hour on the highway. So I think that if they can make it work in the city, it definitely will be operational on highways. But that's just a, you know,
is a lot of this stuff punch. Based on satellite guidance as well as internal mechanism computers? Because the question I'm going to pose to the listeners is, what happens if the power goes out in the grid national, like recently happened in Spain and went into France.
Yeah, but you know what, Robin? Everything can be talked down with a what-if situation. You know, it's you can't go on that. I would go 100% with the driving. I would trust it that much.
Yeah.
And,
I
you
would
know,
trust
also,
it a lot
too,
more than I trust most of the drivers on the road.
What's interesting, if you were to have a Tesla, Tesla has the satellite system up there now that is from cell phone to satellite, bypassing all of the land units. So if you were driving the Tesla with that in it, you wouldn't have to worry about the power outage.
Okay, Mike, that's a good point. But, you know, we just recently had a 90-second blackout at an airport.
Yeah.
And I don't know where all the signals were coming from, but there was 90 seconds of blackout when they couldn't communicate. What could happen here? I'm not trying to argue with anybody on this side of the show, but it's still possible that AI can't fix that yet.
The airport thing is due to aged equipment and an antiquated air traffic control system.
I've heard all that too.
I want to go back to the Slate. Remember last week we talked about the Slate truck / SUV?
Yep.
Well, there's been some major announcements here in the last 2 weeks, including the fact that they're planning on manufacturing this in Wausau, Indiana.
Right.
And they've already acquired property with an old plant on an old printing plant that they're going to convert. And they are hoping to start production in late 2026.
Fabulous.
And what's interesting, when you were talking about the plug-ins, what fascinates me about this little truck, which for people that may not know, it's a truck, but it can also be an SUV. It's got a lot of moving parts that you can buy and wraps and things. That's why they call it the Slate, because you start out with a blank slate. And then you choose the options, but they're keeping everything to a minimalist way so that it keeps that price down. It's still modern, it's still technology-driven, but without all the bells and whistles that some people want.
But it has the upgrades, correct, Mike, to get some of those bells and whistles?
Right, but what's interesting going to the charging port, which is what I wanted to go to, is the cord that they provide has the ability to plug into your regular household outlet, and of course the charging will be, you know, slower, obviously. You could plug it into like what would be the equivalent of your stove or your dryer outlet on your, and so you don't have to put into your house a whole new battery charging system. But also the third leg of it is you can use the chargers out there when you're traveling. So I'm just totally fascinated by this idea that this vehicle is going to be able to be charged without going through a $6,000 or $7,000 or $10,000 process to be able to charge at home.
I think it's a great concept. We hope it moves forward.
Well, they've got a lot of orders. A lot of
Jeff
deposits,
Bezos, like him or not, Jeff Bezos is part of one of the people or investors, directly or indirectly, I'm not sure, in the project. So there's some kind of assurance that there will be money to make it move forward.
Right.
And I think it's great. Just like I think, and I'm going from one thing to another, I think the International Scout could be a great thing too, on a whole different budget level, Mike. I agree. I think the great thing about the Slate is the price point. I'm always a little skeptical that we will get to that price point, but it's a good goal to have.
Right.
Back to the Scout. I saw one here. I'm in Tucson, Arizona right now. There's one parked down the street, and was walking down through the neighborhood last night and saw the vehicle, and it looked mint. It's obviously been repainted, like a lot of vehicles have been here, just because the paint gets just dulled and dries out in the sun. But the car has obviously not a spot of rust, or the Jeep.
This is
or the
old
truck,
Scout, Jay, right?
It was the old Scout, and then the owner came out of the house, and I asked him.
We don't have the new Scout on the road yet.
No. This is the old Scout, 1978, and the owner came out of the house, and I said, how long have you owned it? And he goes, I've owned it since 1978, since day one.
Beautiful.
And I thought, wow, this is cool, really cool. A little like you, Robin. He keeps his cars.
Yeah, but he kept it cooler than I keep my cars. Mike, I got a question about the Slate. Do you think they're going to 3D print the panels? Do you know how they're going to manufacture the plastic panels on the Slate?
I have no idea.
Interesting thing because, Jay, you know, we have some 3D printing going on in your shop office here in town, although it, albeit small things. But there's been talk about 3D printing automobile parts, and I'm wondering whether they could stamp out...
Parts for automobiles and stuff are being 3D printed in various areas, and I'm not going to be surprised if they don't have 3D printing on slate. I mean, this is nothing new to the industry. It's just not as fluent as it is in other other industries, well, like spaceflight, where they're actually printing rockets that way.
Yeah.
So it's nothing new.
I'm not very well versed in 3D printing, but as a general rule, 3D printing is a manufacturing technique that's actually efficient for, you know, low volume production. I think that
you're
talking about body panels, for instance, once you're starting to, you know, produce hundreds and thousands of them, 3D printing is not the way to go. But I have to answer the question. I have no idea how it will be produced.
Right.
But it's a cool concept.
Have either of you, for our listeners' interest? I have not looked at the TELU. Is it the TELU? Is that what it is? Alternative to the slate?
I have not seen that.
It's also a pickup truck that's out there for study and planned production, but I don't know anything more about it other than I think I brought it up in a recent show, maybe with the slate discussion, which is much more knowledgeably given to our listeners this week than... it was last week with the last
speaking of other electric vehicles / trucks, SUVs coming out, it is confirmed the Rivian R2 is confirmed to start production in 2026. They're starting pre-production runs right now. The vehicle will initially be built in Illinois, and Rivian is building a factory in Georgia. We don't know yet what will be built there. But the R2 is pretty much like an R1, a shrunk, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids version of the R1, with a 300-mile range and also a goal of a starting price of around $45,000, which, again, I'd love to see that. I'm a little skeptical that it will be 45. I think when it's all said and done, we're going to be looking at a $55,000-$60,000 vehicle. But that's still, in today's world, that's still a pretty competitive price and a compelling proposition.
But back to what should be called the starting price of vehicles, and go back to Mike's comment about how neat it will be if Slate can keep the price point more to the $20,000 range than higher or whatever was range it was. I think it was 20,000, Mike. That was a challenge.
Be 20 to 30.
Yeah,
depends
20 to 30.
Depends on how you stack.
Well, before you start adding on doodads, which a lot of people probably will end up doing. The biggest issue, some of the discussion of the automobile industry in recent weeks has been about manufacturers producing more basically priced vehicles, that is, vehicles without the extra fancy interiors and all the doodads on them, because to make them more affordable for people other than just promoting it on an advertisement. But you go to a dealer and you can't find one anywhere near that price because the manufacturers have been loading up all the production ones because they're more profitable.
Well, with all that being said, I hate to tell you this, but we have come to the end of our time.
Fabulous. So listeners all, until the next show, we are Car Keys with Mike, Robin, and Jay.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.